You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey everyone, quick programming note. We recorded this episode last night before any of the Ime Udoka news broke, so that's not going to be covered here. However, there's a lot of good stuff, and I think you'll enjoy. Alrighty, welcome back to the Celtics Lab podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Tiptobai, joined by Alex Goldberg and Dr. Justin Quinn. Oof, the offseason never stops. We've got some news to talk about. But then in the lab portion of the programming, we're going to be talking to the Ronnie 2K, about Celtics player ratings, the game itself, and what he thinks of the upcoming season for the Boston Celtics. But that's later in the programming. First, we'll talk about the news, the good, the bad, the ugly. And before all of that, Alex, give a quick PSA to the fans in the Beltway.
For sure. Yeah. If you are for some reason a Celtics lab listener in the DC area, your old friends, Divine Sweater, will be playing a show with DC natives, the Crystal Casino Band, at DC 9 Club on Saturday, this coming Saturday. Tickets are flying, so get in on that quickly if you intend to go, because there might not be many tickets left. We'll see.
Yeah, the music you heard at this intro is Divine Sweater, if anyone's new to the podcast. And if anyone is old to the podcast, I'm getting a new mic. The echo will go away. So thanks for bearing with us. I tried everything I could save buying a new mic, but here we go. Dr. Quinn, how are you?
Not too shabby. Theoretically, this was supposed to be the off season. Let's talk about why it is not really an off season.
Sure. So listeners, if you're here for Ronnie 2K, he's coming. But for now, we're going to talk about very Celtics-y stuff. And we got to start with Robert Williams III and his left knee. We learned that he's going to go have a cleanup. That's how it's being described, on that knee, the same knee that he had a meniscus tear in the spring and bothered him throughout the postseason. Per Sean Devenny of Heavy.com, he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks, which means, you know, flirting with missing the beginning of the regular season, but certainly out for training camp, almost definitely out for the preseason. And who knows, they might take their time. 4 to 6 weeks often turns to 8 to 10. You can hear my voice. I'm not too worried about it yet, but maybe I'm wrong about that. Alex, level of concern?
I would put it at about, I would go with a 5 or 6 right now. And I would do so not so much because I'm super worried about Rob missing the first 2 to 3 weeks of the season, more so because I am worried about two things. One, the fact that the knee injuries are really starting to pile up for Robert Williams in a way that has always been concerning, but particularly this year with the Celtics entering as a true blue championship favorite or contender at the very least, they're going to need Robert Williams if they want to actually meet that goal. So in the long run, I would rather him clear it up now than have to deal with this in the playoffs again when he was very clearly limited by his knee injury. But I still don't love the fact that this seems to be a kind of lingering problem. The biggest concern I have, though, is actually got nothing to do with Rob Williams and more to do with putting miles on Al Horford that we probably don't need to be putting on him, particularly at the beginning of the regular season. As we have discussed ad nauseum on Celtics Lab, Al was pretty critical for the Celtics getting to the finals last year. He really turned into the best version of himself, particularly in the playoffs. And he did so in the context of coming off a season in the Oklahoma City organization where he was basically on ice for the entire second half of the year, which I imagine certainly helped with that prospect. To burn the candle early for Al in the regular season, playing him presumably at the five a lot while Rob sits, strikes me as potentially dicey for how fresh he's going to be heading into the postseason. So that's my biggest concern.
Dr. Quinn, what did Alex miss?
Well, I will push back just a tiny bit on the idea that Rob is piling up knee injuries. This is, as far as I'm aware of it, a fairly routine cleanup. And just the timing of the situation and the fact that he kept playing on it immediately afterwards kind of pushed off the ability to be aware that he was going to have that problem after like letting it calm down a bit after the finals. So it's not, I think a five on a scale of 1 to 10 is about where we want to peg our level of concern. But I completely agree as far as not putting too much. I mean, not even just on Al Horford, there's very little proven depth on this team in terms of the front court now.
Yeah, quickly. Became maybe an area of concern or an opportunity, I guess, depending on your point of view there. Yeah, Alex, I think you nailed it. As and I don't think the Celtics would, but like overreacting and overplaying Al Horford doesn't seem worth it. I'd love to see a lot of looks with Jason Tatum at the four and Grant Williams at the five. But there will be something of a big man battle at training camp, and that's going to include a new name, Luka Samanich. Samanich? How do you say?
Samanich, I think.
My guess is Samanich, but I have not heard it said out loud by anyone who I trust. So please, someone who does know, enlighten us so we can stop screwing up this poor guy's name.
I screw up every poor guy's name and poor gal and poor everyone else. Anyways, our CLNS's own Bobby Manning broke this one, that they're going to bring this kid Luka in, not that Luka. He's 6'10", he's 22 years old. They're going to bring him in to training camp. He was the number 19 pick in the 2019 draft by San Antonio. Played two seasons with them. He has looked good in non-NBA action and G League action and elsewhere. Quick kid, I think a little bit of defensive liabilities. Alex or Justin, any immediate thoughts on Luka Samanich? Goodness.
I think bringing him in strikes me as pretty in keeping with kind of what Brad Stevens and the Celtics front office have been doing in terms of looking for backups to fill that role. So the thing that we've heard over and over again in the offseason is that Brad Stevens and company are pretty bullish on Luke Kornet as being a rotation player who can actually log some minutes for this team. As you all loyal listeners know, I am the world's biggest Luke Kornet fan, so that's fine with me. That being said, in the event that Luke Kornet is for whatever reason not able to live up to that task, or just for extra depth and providing a different look, rather than going to the Dwight Howards or the DeMarcus Cousins or, you know, these kind of proven, if not a little long in the tooth, available vet free agents, the Celtics have been prioritizing looking for kind of youth and G League guys who are playing abroad, you know, people who maybe are a little hungrier and have a little bit more of a fire in their belly to try and fight for a roster spot. I don't think it's an insane play. I am a little concerned, particularly just because none of the candidates proposed strike me as having serious size, which I think could potentially be a problem for the Celtics in matchups against like your Joel Embiid's, for example, which they're kicking off the season with. But, you know, ultimately, I trust Brad's process, and I'm sure that they will find somebody.
Yeah, I'm going to – let me just read through some of the G League players. And then, Justin, we were talking off air about what you think it all means. We don't – with respect to these guys, we don't need to spend too much time on them. But aside from Luke Kornet, who might crack the big man rotation, Justin Jackson is coming to training camp. Jake Lehman coming to training camp. And Mafundo Cabangele, I really hope I'm saying that right, is coming to training camp with Noah Vonleh. And then we learned today that Bruno Capocollo, best of luck, but he's not coming to training camp. So a bunch of veteran guys, unproven guys, end of the bench guys coming to training camp to maybe carve out a spot for themselves in the big boy rotation. And Dr. Quinn, you said as such, it makes more sense to give these guys a chance rather than sign LaMarcus Aldridge or Dwight Howard. Why do you think that is?
Well, for now, based on what we've heard about Rob, based on what the needs, everything that's going on, like nothing's really changed, right? We just, a procedure that would have been done at the beginning of the summer that really is not a big deal, as long as it goes well, is playing out, and it's going to probably go maybe 1 or 2 weeks into the regular season if we are on the unluckier side of things or really the safer side of things. I think what we're looking at here is if they were looking at a situation where they thought Rob was going to be out longer than they expect him to be, then they would have changed their gears entirely rather than basically just sticking to their plan, which is what they appear to be doing. And if they do that, then I see, you know, one of two routes, which is both of which require trading for a player who really can play like some proven minutes. If they want to go like cheap, maybe like a Mike Muscala, who will be, I think, available to be traded in November, early November. That would be a cheap option where you don't necessarily have to trade away Gallo or maybe invest in large, you know, significant draft assets to get the deal done. But if they have some serious concerns about Rob's health long-term, then you might see them try to find someone like Jacob Pertl, for example, yeah, who might be unloadable. It would cost a lot, but if you're
worried. Two first-round picks for Jacob Pertl strikes me as a little rich, but.
But if you perhaps include a young point guard who has, you know, made a name for himself as a shooter, I think you might be able to get that deal done with just one pick.
Are you talking about Pritchard?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I think of him as a shooting guard, but you probably, right, he's more of a point
guard. He plays the shooting guard on offense, absolutely. Not on defense, though.
Yeah, good point, we'll argue. Yeah, it also occurs to me that as much as, yes, the Celtics do need, I don't mean to be reductive, but they need a warm body as their third or fourth big off the bench. I mean, they can't not carry another big with Rob out and with Horford reportedly not playing back-to-backs. There's also a world where, you know, playing Luke Kornet and Sam Hauser extra minutes for a team that really has its eyes on the postseason is beneficial for the trade market. To your point, Dr. Quinn, that if you're hoping to take Gallo's salary and a young player or a player who's a bit of a flyer, you kind of got to give the trade market something. So if you can get Sam Hauser bonus minutes or Luke Kornet bonus minutes, that's not necessarily a bad thing. And I don't mean, again, to reduce their role on the team as trade fodder, but the Celtics are that class of team that doesn't have too many future-facing assets left. So maximizing them as best they can is pretty important.
And, you know, to that end, also, it could even be for not trading. If Luke Kornet and Sam Hauser get more minutes in the regular season early on than they might expect, that could potentially pay dividends for them later on in a deeper playoff rotation, which is something the Celtics really went out of their way to try and build this offseason with some of their acquisitions. At the end of the day, the thing that the Celtics have going for them is they are still an incredibly deep team of perimeter defenders with some size at the guard and wing positions. So a lot of the strengths that are brought by having a high quality traditional big man like Robert Williams can be mitigated to some degree by Derek White, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, just being big athletic wings who can kind of mix it up in the post. And Marcus Smart, obviously, you know, he's a master at that. But, you know, there is a limited shelf life on that. And ultimately, the Celtics team at its ceiling does need Robert Williams to be as healthy as possible.
Sure. And to that end, I mean, the team ceiling resides in probably Jason Tatum's hands with respect to Jaylen Brown. And today, or yesterday, I guess, Tim Bontemps on the Hoop Collective said the following: I think the Celtics are going to win the most games in the regular season, and I think Jason Tatum has a good chance to win MVP. I'm looking at betonline.ag right now, and Tatum's odds have slipped a little bit. He's a plus 1200 behind Luka, that Luka, Giannis, Embiid, Kevin Durant, and the Joker. So I'm not a huge sports gambler, but it looks like pretty good odds if you believe in Jason Tatum. And that's a good time to pause the action and talk about our friends over at betonline.ag, the fastest and easiest way to place your online sports wagering. Football is back, and BetOnline is your number one source for all your football betting needs and sports info this season. Also, Jason Tatum MVP odds. Find all the latest football odds, news, and game matchups, and more. BetOnline is your continued source for all your wagering information, including live betting, free contests, and live scores. BetOnline is always the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports and events, including MLB, MMA, tennis, boxing, and even golf. Head to BetOnline to join and receive your 100% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use your promo, our promo code, excuse me, CLNS50, CLNS50 is that 100% promo code to get those rewards bet online where the game starts. Yeah, world-class segue. I mean, come on. Okay, so we can talk about that, I guess, eventually, but let me continue with our little bit of news and to confirm our world-class reporting. Heavy.com, Sean Devenny has also said that probably the Celtics aren't going to look at LaMarcus Aldridge or Dwight Howard, even though Adrian Wojnarowski said that they might. So, you know, pick your favorite source on that one, I suppose. It doesn't seem like on our end that the Celtics are going to bring in a big ticket big, but it occurs to me anyways that this could be a little bit of a bartering chip for Mr. Grant Williams. The latest reporting is that Grant and the Celtics talked about an extension over the summer, and talks are on ice for now, not for anything other than they're just on ice. And they have until October 17th to pick those talks back up and get an extension done. Dr. Quinn, first of all, do you think they'll get one done? And talk us through roughly the size and scope of the extension talks so far.
Well, with the cap going up, we're going to see the mid-level exception going up, and we're going to see a lot of teams that will have that available. So as long as they are offering Grant, you know, $13, $14 million, I think he will at least entertain the idea of talks. I think it's going to be closer to $15 million per year for 4 years. That's going to need to happen to get it done. If they go lower than that, I think both sides are better served by waiting it out.
Sure. Alex, how optimistic are you?
I feel reasonably optimistic that the Celtics and Grant will ultimately work something out. It is going to be a little bit weird because I think you're right, Justin, that Grant is ultimately going to get paid more than Robert Williams. And I think a lot of people, myself included, would argue that Robert Williams is maybe the more impactful player than Grant, even though Grant is really improved and seems to have a nice upward development curve. But ultimately, the big reason that Grant Williams has a solid bargaining advantage and one that I think he will find a way to parlay into a nice payday is because he is the long-term succession plan for Al Horford going forward. Yeah. Obviously, Al is great. And, you know, if he stays at the current level that he's been at, which I think we feel reasonably optimistic that he'll be at for a couple more years at least, this is not as much of a big deal. But the long-term answer at the four, provided the Celtics don't dramatically shake up their roster anytime soon, is Grant Williams. And I think he knows that. And I think his agent knows that. So I agree. You can expect around the 50-ish million range.
What does Grant make right now?
I think about six. Five or six.
Yeah. So there's a world where, so I think Horford, with great respect, will have to decline a little bit in the coming years. I think Grant can get a little bit better, but between their current total salaries, it's like $30 million tied up in Al Horford and Grant Williams. So I do think there's a world where next season and a season or two after that, you can have Grant Williams and Al Horford on the team for a lower number than they're paying right now. So I actually do think there's a great chance to get Grant in and make it work. Whether or not that happens in October, I'm not sure. And I think very realistically, we'll just shelve the Al Horford next contract discussion for a week when we need something to talk about. But Grant Williams is doing the charity golf tour. He's selling merchandise. He's best buddies with Jason Tatum. He seems really entrenched in the Celtics organization. So unless someone really throws a bag at him, it seems like he wants to stick around in Boston. It seems like Boston wants him.
He's restricted anyway, so he doesn't really get too much of a choice. It's just, do they want to, you know, cheap out on him? No one's going to give him a max. I mean, so it's a very good chance that he's going to be back, but maybe not under the terms the Celtics would prefer.
I think a lot of teams have, or many more teams have cap space next year. Only takes one Kings, one Knicks to do something dumb.
Yeah, you're right, but I doubt it.
Yeah, no, I'm not. No one here is too worried, I don't think. But stranger things have happened. Okay. A couple other things in the interest of news related to the Celtics. And then if we have time, we'll get to some other stuff. The Celtics released a press wire saying we got a new court with a number 6 painted right into the lane on either end of the floor to honor Bill Russell. This is on top of a bunch of other ceremonies and things they're going to do in honor of Bill Russell, including things the league's going to do. And that has come with a new parquet floor, with a new Lucky the Leprechaun center court. If you haven't seen this, it doesn't have the big kind of iconic white behind it. And we disagree about how it looks. So I think we're all in agreement. We like the Bill Russell tribute. The sixth in the lane is smart. That's where he cut his teeth. So why not? However, the it's a throwback to the old parquet with a stripped down logo. Alex, you'd like it. 30 seconds on why you like it.
I just think the design is pretty clean. I have a tendency to get a little worried when courts and when teams radically redesign things that are working. Yeah. And, you know, the Celtics like awful parquet gray jerseys are a testament to that, for example, as well as their weird Irish pub font lettering jerseys from a couple years back that just make me think of Enes Kanter giving up offensive rebounds. But no, I think overall this is a pretty like low impact change. It's a pretty clean design and it's not overdoing it. So I'm fine with it. I think it might actually look good.
Quinn, you don't like it as much as Alex?
Well, for two reasons. Aesthetically, it just looks like someone did not quite the full job in terms of the graphic design that they were working on. Didn't, you know, they like reversed course a little bit and like deleted mm-hmm. the finished job. But also just because of the whole thing that Alex was just talking about with the jerseys. If you see some of the court designs floating around the NBA, they're getting really, really busy. And I don't like that. I really don't want to look at the court and be trying to see whether or not that's someone's foot or like a tree or a house or just all kinds of crazy graphics are finding their way onto courts. And like, this is nowhere near that. I'm not suggesting that it is, but you crack open that door for novelty and, you know, people start getting like all crazy for it. And I'm not saying the public, I'm saying the people on the other end of the business equation here. For me, it's just a bit much.
I'm probably somewhere in between. I think the Celtics brand is a little too buttoned up. It's a little too self-serious at times, with respect, at least on social anyways. It's one of those things where I think it'll look really great in person and on maybe on national TV broadcasts or certain shots. But I suspect that on any given night, it is going to be aesthetically crowded and busy. So not a huge fan, but I love Bill Russell, so I'll take it. Last bit of Celtics news, Taco Fall has a book coming out. More on that perhaps later. But check it out if you're a fan of Taco Fall or books. Readers make leaders, you know. And just before our guest arrives, let's talk a little bit about the biggest news in the NBA, which is Robert Sarver appears to be pushed into selling the team. I don't think that's incorrect, even if it hasn't explicitly been made clear. The league came out and had his back. The players came out and did not. And now it's Wednesday evening. Sarver is looking to sell the Suns and the Mercury. Quick, rapid reaction to how it went down, Justin.
Well, I think he took a look back at the last time this happened and decided he did not want to be that person. There is a Twitter modismo that is out there that probably you've all heard before, whereas there is always one person who is super, super popular on Twitter every day, and the goal is to not be that person. Yep. He is looking to not be that person for several weeks, if not months. So smart move on his part, and I'm glad it happened, even if he is going to make a shit ton of money, excuse my language, and basically be rewarded for being a giant ass. So, yeah.
Yeah, Alex?
I mean, I don't have a whole lot to add other than like, and sponsors, we can bleep this, I don't know, we'll figure it out, but fuck Robert Sarver. That guy's a terrible human being. I'm glad that he's out of the NBA or will be out of the NBA. I'm upset that he's going to keep stacking up billions of dollars. I hope that he doesn't sell the team to some other equally awful person, which is extremely possible. But all that being said, you know, this guy was just a nightmare for the league. And I really hope that this will put, I don't think it will, but I hope that this will put some other NBA owners on notice that when LeBron and Chris Paul and the player union and a bunch of other people weigh in this heavily on matters around, you know, sexual harassment, racism, kind of organizational rot that was occurring under Robert Sarver. That does have a pretty significant impact. And I think that it's no coincidence that Sarver is selling the team after all of that backlash. And I would hope that those owners would see that, take notice, and then in doing so, maybe look to make any changes that they might need to make. God knows there are probably some skeletons in closets. So I'm glad the situation seems to be resolving itself. I'm pretty upset that it happened in the first place. Robert Sarver, good riddance.
Yeah, what I like about what's happening is that the think pieces on the death of the player empowerment era, because Kevin Durant didn't get traded, were misguided, because player empowerment is not about just playing with your friends. It's actually about shaping the culture of the workplace where you happen to play basketball.
Star empowerment. Let's call it what it is.
Sure, star empowerment. Employee empowerment. And you're right, Alex. LeBron and Chris Paul put their thumb on the scale. Maybe they didn't know they had to do it after the fact. Maybe they were just as surprised as we were that this is how the league came down. But in short order, the players and in part the advertisers, the media partners said, hell no. As well they might. Robert Sarver did things that, you know, if anyone did at their job, even if they're a big cheese, they would probably lose that job. So it's frustrating that he will probably make a lot of money in the process. And who knows? The Saudi Arabian government or Jeff Bezos or someone could buy the Suns, and that could be even more complicated. But I am happy for and impressed by how the players and the NBPA work together on this in short order. I'm sure that Adam Silver knows how big of an L he took. I'm sure the owners recognize the power that they thought they had in this play specifically didn't bear out the way I'm sure they thought it was going to. And we do have CBA and television negotiations in the next few years. Perhaps this will be important. Perhaps this is just the end of a crappy story with a little bit of a feel-good ending. Who knows? If you'd like to donate $2.1 billion to this podcast so that we can buy the Suns, please feel free to do that. Otherwise, like it and subscribe if you haven't already. And on the other side of a break, we'll talk to Ronnie Tuque. Alrighty. Let's hop into the Celtics lab, and we have a very special guest, a man who really doesn't need an introduction, but I'll introduce him anyways. Ronnie Tuque, the brainchild behind all the marketing at 2K, not just NBA 2K, but 2K Sports, which we'll get into. He's here to talk about Celtics player ratings, the game itself, NBA 2K23, available now, and a few other things. Ronnie, how are you? Welcome.
I'm great. 2K launched, what, 12 days ago. Yeah. 12 days ago. It's been a been a journey. Thank you for the flattering introduction. I am not the brain. I don't know if I'm the brain child. I'm probably just the mouth. Okay, but I appreciate it. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so almost every year, you know, players react to the game and then fans react to the game and on and on. So we're going to ask you a little bit about that with a sure. Celtics tint. So as we are wont to do, we'll break it into thirds. So I'll swing to Justin first, then you'll get Alex, and I'll bring it on home. So Justin, take it away.
Cool. So first of all, I would like to thank you in the content desert that is September. Something that probably drives you nuts, or maybe it doesn't. That's my first question. Has been really keeping me afloat in terms of stuff to write about, which is people being unhappy with their 2K ratings, whether it's the team or the player. We know that, you know, Jaylen Brown and Grant vocally complained on Twitter about their ratings. Like, what do you do when this happened? Anything?
I'll address your first question first, which was the dearth of NBA content in September. You know, the NBA's done an amazing job of becoming 365. It's happened in like a really kind of short period of time, like 6-7 years, where, you know, you care about summer league now and you care about obviously draft and free agency, but we're a big part of that now, you know, like not just ratings, but obviously just our entire marketing campaign sits in what is traditionally their off season outside of, you know, the pandemic's years for obvious reasons. But We really thrive in that kind of conversation and being that kind of entertainment void for the fans, and then, you know, continuing to be an educational device in the basketball world with our products. So that's really cool. And then, yeah, obviously a big part of that is the ratings, and a couple of the guys you mentioned, I know they were fired up about their ratings. I was actually on a podcast with Jake Paul last week, and it was funny. He's like, you know, NBA players, stop getting mad at Ronnie. Just go and play better. I think that's a little extreme, but, you know, like, I think it's so cool that these guys are so competitive that it matters so much to them. You know, I talk about this all the time, but this is our 24th installment of the franchise, which means that these kids that are coming to the league have played it their entire lives. Like, Jason Tatum is 26 years old. So, you know, these guys have played it their whole lives. So it's like getting drafted to be in the NBA is like 1A, but now like being in this video game and caring about your rating is 1B. It's really kind of fascinating. And so that's my, you know, reaction to whenever a player gets fired up. I think it's very, very cool.
So just if you can't answer this, it's okay, but has anyone ever convinced you to change their ratings, whether it's a player?
I don't think so.
No.
And I've been offered some weird things over the years, but I, you know, like, we're very authentic, and we're also like a well-knit team on the, you know, the rating side. Like, sure, they've lobbied, and in some cases they've like definitely lobbied us in to make a change in not too long of a time that their sample size of, because that's what it's based on, right? Like, we don't change the rating off of one 60-point game. It's off of, like, consistent performance, and we're trying to tell a story about where this guy stands in the bigger basketball community. So I think that we have kind of, like, changed it over a short period of time, but, like, we're not in the business of getting persuaded outside of, you know, we did a thing last year on TBS called Underrated that I was part of. It wasn't about ratings, but like a couple of the players, Karl-Anthony Towns was like one of them. He like wanted to complain about his outlet passing, which I think is so fascinating. And so we did this contest of him like throwing crazy outlets, and yeah, he proved that he was a great outlet passer. And so we upgraded a couple of his badges in short order. So not directly because of that, but like that definitely got on our radar.
So that kind of sets the table for my next question, which is about how the sausages get made. Like, how often do you do these ratings updates? Like, how long do they take? What actually goes into a specific player's rating, other than, you know, a window of NBA action over time?
Yeah, I mean, they're dynamic throughout the year, which is the funniest part. You know, like, why are they getting so upset or upset over where their rating starts at the beginning of the season? Because like, their action does actually affect the rating. We announce it every week, I believe, during the regular season, but they change on a daily basis. And again, it's based on sample size, you know, and obviously it impacts the younger players a little bit more than the older players, because we have less history on the younger players. Like, I thought it was going to be really fascinating how we were going to rate Chet Holmgren early in the year, because he didn't have a lot of action in the NBA, and then the summer league he was truncated, and like, so he was really mad about his rating when I told him in summer league. And I'm like, well, in our defense, we don't have a lot of video on you, right? Like, we have a little, and we have it, but it's all in college, and it's, you know, like, not the same level of competition. So it's challenging with those young guys, and it's also challenging with the guys that are injured for a year plus, right? Like, we need to sort of see it. So those ones are always tougher, but for the most part, you know, we really get it right. And if you look at that list compared to everybody else, it's like, meaning like their peers, you just look at that list in order, you're like, wow, this is actually really correct, you know?
So one last question before I pass it off to Alex, what else goes into making this game? Like, do you do the whole ping pong ball on the knees and elbows and shoulders and all that stuff to like map the movement of a player, how a player's body moves and compared to another player or anything like that?
Are we talking, I mean, the game is, it's a big business, right? There's hundreds of people that work at 2K. Motion capture, which you just mentioned, is a big part of it. Like, capturing all the animations, making sure they look like themselves, but there's so much more. Like we've released videos about like the lighting in the stadiums and how we've like recorded hundreds of hours of footage of each of the stadiums and like try to get the lighting throughout the entire game as it transitions over quarters and as LED shadows kind of like, it's like crazy the level of detail, but that's what we're chasing. We're always chasing that, you know, that authenticity and trying to be as realistic as possible. We've done like multi-person like motion captures where like those people are working together. You see it come to life when you look at the crowd. Like you see the guy that's like doing a selfie along with the guy that's doing concessions along with the girl that's doing, you know, jumping up and down. Like that all coming together is a ton of work, and it's just so impressive what our visual concepts team that develops the game puts on every year.
Thank you, Alex.
Well, just first off, Ronnie, thank you so much for joining us. Just really quickly to kind of wrap up the ratings conversation. If you're mad about 2K ratings, then that just means that you're not playing the game very well. I'm just going to throw that out there. Jaylen Brown has been rated at like an 83 before, but he's still one of the nastiest 2K players out there. You just got to learn your players. Anyway, that's my spiel on that. So swinging towards Jaylen Brown and other Celtics related stuff, I'm curious, just right off the bat, what are your expectations for Boston this year?
I mean, they have a large hill to climb. Most teams that lose in the finals don't have, I mean, that's a pretty chronicled story. They don't have a good season the year after, but they're a better team than they were last year. And it's not even close. Like, I think adding Middleton and the leadership there is huge for them, especially taking them away from one of your competitors. Did I say Middleton? I didn't mean Middleton.
You did. That's okay.
Sorry. This is my third interview in like an hour. So I don't know why my brain just went to Middleton. I don't know why. That's so weird. Anyway, I'm obviously meaning Malcolm Brogdon. The addition of him alongside who's the other guy that you guys signed?
Gallinari, who will probably not suit up for the Celtics this year on account of his ACL injury that he sustained in Europe.
So that one was challenging, but either way, more depth regardless. Like, and the young core is getting old, you know, like a little bit more experience. They had a lot of like playoff highs and some playoff lows against the Warriors. They're going to be right there at the top of the East. The crazy thing is, I mentioned Middleton. I'm not a huge fan of the Bucks. Like, I don't really get it. Like, obviously Giannis is an amazing player, but like, and Jrue Holiday is a great defender and can stretch the floor a little bit, but if Jrue Holiday is not on that floor, they're not getting anywhere near the finals, right? So like, I think that they're a little bit hyped. I think Miami's going to take a step back. The Sixers are going to be interesting. I think James Harden's actually going to have a much better year. And then this weird situation with Brooklyn, and what they're going to be is going to be super fascinating. So I think I actually think that Brooklyn is going to figure it out. So it's going to be Brooklyn and Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals.
It always seems to be Brooklyn and Boston, doesn't it? Yep. So speaking of Brooklyn and Boston and their relationship, obviously the Celtics hired a fairly prominent assistant coach last year in Ime Udoka, who was on the Brooklyn bench and then went to join Boston and promptly beat the Brooklyn Nets pretty handily in round one of the playoffs. And our very own Cameron has a copy of 2K, courtesy of the fine folks over at the 2K organization. He's been playing it, and he has been doing some simulations on his My Career and his My GM mode, along with a number of other 2K players. And often the result in that is that Ime Udoka ends up winning Coach of the Year in a lot of those simulations. So what do you think about that as a prospect of Ime, a potential Coach of the Year candidate?
I think scientifically that makes a lot of sense. I think the challenging thing about that is it's hard for a coach to win Coach of the Year after going to the finals the year before, right? So like, I think that's his success is not going to breed success in that regard. If he goes to if they're the number one seed, is he a lock for Coach of the Year? Probably not, right? Like there's a lot of stories. That's usually how. That's why I'm not a huge like believer in the awards. You know, like it doesn't really mean a ton. Even MVP doesn't mean a ton. You know, like over the years historically, the MVP hasn't always been the best player on, you know, in the game of that year. That's why Kobe only won one, and, you know, several other instances of that, right? So, I'm not surprised that it's simulated that way. I'm sure the Boston's going to be there near the end. Of course he'll be in consideration, but I think his success last year is going to keep him from that award.
So speaking of the MVP race, the Celtics potentially have an MVP candidate on their hands in Jason Tatum. There's also a number of other players that are looking to, as you kind of mentioned or alluded to earlier, take the next step in developing their game and kind of taking both their individual game and the Celtics as a team to the next level. In your mind, which player do you think is going to have the biggest impact on this Celtics season, and who might take the biggest jump from where they are now to what they could be by the end of this year?
You know what's funny? I think the first half of the year last year, the Celtics kind of struggled. Not by kind of, I mean, they were a 500 team, right? Like, and then all of a sudden the light switch came on and they were just totally dominant. And a lot of that was Jason's development, but I feel like it's going to be another step up for him. I think he's tasted playoff success and like been that close. And I know him really well, like great, great dude, such a leader, such a voice, so respected. I mean, I think that's probably one of the things that maybe you don't know about Jason unless you get to know him a little bit. Like he commands respect. And so I could see him taking a whole nother step. Of course, there's a bunch of young guys on that Celtics team that are going to evolve, but it's all going to come down to him. And I think that at the end of the year, I really do believe he's going to be a top three MVP candidate for sure. And I don't say that lightly. I think that, you know, a lot of the guys that are usually in the MVP conversation are either like just like Giannis, for example. He's always there. He's expected to be there. Like the voter fatigue definitely sets in when it comes to like guys like him. You know, I think it's going to be a coin flip between Luka and Jason and Devin, those three.
So you mentioned Giannis, you mentioned Kevin Durant. Obviously, there are some other heavy hitters in the Eastern Conference that the Celtics will need to worry about if they want to ultimately summit the conference and win the NBA title. In your mind, who in this Eastern Conference should the Celtics be the most worried about? And are there any teams that stand out as like potential surprise threats that they might not be considering?
I think the Sixers are definitely somebody they got to concern themselves with just because of the size and the versatility on that team. I think Maxey's going to, you know, obviously take another step up in his game. So, like, that's probably the team that they're most logistically afraid of. I'm trying to think of one of the, like, lower-run teams that they should be maybe scared of. Yeah, I mean, the East, the problem is, like, it's really top-heavy. There's some really, really great teams in the top, but, like, the bottom is still kind of a struggle. Maybe Chicago takes a step. And maybe Atlanta, maybe. But I think Atlanta is still a piece or two away, and so is Chicago. So probably nobody on that next level tier of teams. What do you guys think? Is there somebody that they should be afraid of?
Maybe Cleveland if they put it all together. We'll see.
Here you go. Oh, my mic.
Yeah, I mean, I think Cleveland, Alex, is a good pick. I'd also hazard the Heat. Could go in any direction. The Heat could swing a trade. The Heat could fall back. But
I don't know who the Heat trade for. I mean, you missed Mitchell.
Beal's not. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess that's what's hard. Yeah, okay.
Man.
I'll say there.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, well, maybe we'll check back in.
I think they're really well. But here's the thing: the window. You better take advantage of that window. Like, they gotta get there, and they gotta finish it off this year. But I'll tell you what, their biggest competition is still in the West. Like, Golden State's still going to be very, very good. I mean, they're definitely getting a little older, but they're going to be very good. And then a lot of the teams in the West are a lot better. Outside of Utah and San Antonio, all those teams in the West are really, really good.
Yeah, I definitely am not trying to sleep on the Golden State Warriors. I've made that mistake once. I'm not going to do it again.
Don't do it again. But, I mean, there's a bunch of teams in the West. Like, the Nuggets are kind of getting slept on. Like, I think once Jamal Murray's totally healthy, they're going to be kind of scary. Minnesota, I picked them. Everybody laughed at me when I picked them to go to the second round of the playoffs last year, and that's exactly what they did, and now they're better, right? So I guess they didn't go to the second round, but technically they went to the second round.
The new second round.
But I thought they were going to go one more round, but nobody expected them to make the playoffs. They're a lot better. Yeah, and don't forget the Clippers. You know, you got Kawhi and Paul George. I mean, they probably are the favorites to win it all. The Clippers are. But we've said that so many years, and it's not come together. So we'll see.
It's a serious take. All right, Ronnie, I'm going to swing it to Cam.
All right, cool. Ronnie, I just want to talk about the game, actually, NBA 2K23. That's been out since September 9th. I think I know the answer, but how are you feeling about the release of the game?
I told you back in June, July, whatever month it was, 17 years ago, that it was going to be the greatest game of all time. And it seems like the community seems to, you know, echo that statement. And it's been just really fascinating. And it's kind of like served so many different people, mm-hmm. you know, people that like wanted to remember history with NBA, you know, my NBA and the era, the new eras, and getting to go play in Kobe's era and MJ's era and Magic and Larry's era. Like, that's so cool. And then obviously the Jordan Challenge is going back in time and getting to play in that filter, if you want to, and seeing the game back in, you know, the early 80s and stuff. But then, you know, the city and where people are playing in my career, and that whole world is just taking on a whole nother level. Like the more established like cultural vibe of the city, like all of them, the affiliations is very, very, very cool. And gotten people excited. And then just like people playing competitively and being super happy about it. You know what's crazy? I haven't had a ton of time to play.
I was gonna ask you. Yeah.
I have literally been on the road since, this is my second day at home since launch. Actually, since a week before launch. It's dang, crazy. I still haven't installed it on my own console. I've obviously played it a few times since retail hit, but not even at my house. So this weekend, I'm hoping around wedding planning that I can make it happen.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what's your favorite feature? Like, now that it's live, now that it's like the dust is settling a little bit, either your favorite feature to mess around with.
I mean, of course, the Jordan challenges are cool.
Yeah, it's like, pretty fun.
If you lived in that like era, or even if you didn't, like, it's just, it's a different and fun experience. And those challenges are really tough, especially a few of them. And then getting to see MJ versus Kobe and like things like that, that's all awesome. But of course, when it comes to the core game, like, the gameplay, especially now, like skewed a little bit back towards like the big man, is something that really resonates with me. And so I've always played, leaned heavily in the city when I'm not playing opening packs in my team. I play a lot in the city, and I can't wait to, you know, jump in.
Cool. Yeah, I'm having a lot of fun.
Have you come across my scene, Kim?
No, I haven't.
I have four of them, but you should go look. You should go look for my scene. It's pretty fun. It's actually a really important scene. You can get rebirthed and stuff like that. Talk about like us always trying to be relevant to what's happening in the real world. Even my scene, I mean, my scene's always been that way. Like, whatever's happened in my life, like, it's been about my dog before. It's been about whatever. But this year, it's about, like, sending out wedding invites and, like, doing, which is kind of funny, you know, like, following that storyline and how expensive my wedding is. So, like, definitely check that out. It's pretty funny.
Anybody who doubts how realistic this is, they even included this weird reporter who has this like Celtics podcast. His tweets are in the game. It's pretty wild.
That's right. That is true.
I mean, that's how you know it's a high caliber game.
Have you been tweeted screenshots of that yet, Cam?
No, but I have, because I'm a teacher. I've had one kid say, "I have to ask you the weirdest question," and I was like, "No, I know what you're going to ask." And let me tell you the story. So a couple more things we'll get you out of here, Ronnie. Actually, same, but different. You meet a lot of celebrities, influencers, things like that. Who is the most surprising 2K fan you've come across?
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess nothing really surprised me. Randomly, though, like a while ago, this is years now, like I'm followed on social media by Jennifer Love Hewitt and Melissa Joan Hart. I'm gonna think that it's their kids that like made that happen. But Jennifer Love Hewitt only followed like 65 people on Twitter, and I was like, why am I one of them? But maybe she's a big 2K fan. That'd be awesome. That'd be great.
That's never would have guessed.
That's kind of random. But no, like, look, our game serves a huge player base and lots of people that play the game and get really excited about it. And so nothing really surprises me. You know, like, you know who's been kind of hitting me up every week or had his agent hit me up every week is Paul Scheer from The League. If you watch that TV show, like, a little surprising that he plays the game as religiously as he does, but there's no like it is kind of an entertainment vehicle for all ages, all genders, all everything, right? Like, we're trying to be as accessible as possible, and it's amazing. Our online community is just so fantastic.
Okay, a couple more quickly. So you and I chatted in July at the launch preview of the game, not retail launch. And J. Cole never got brought up. You all were pretty tight-lipped about that one. So first of all, very sneaky, but just give us a quick backstory.
It's funny, Cam. I believe like 4 days before that, I had shot, I was at our mocap studio with J. Cole for his final scene. So like, okay. It was definitely top of mind. Like, we had just spent a lot of time with Cole and shot his scenes. I believe that was the timeline. God, this year was such a blur. But that was a long time coming. I talked to him for the first time back when I played in my first celebrity game, which was 2019,
maybe?
Yeah, I believe it was 2019. And when he was wearing that Amiri shirt and he dunked in the all, like during commercial break, and he missed the dunk or whatever. Anyway, that was the first time we talked. He's like, well, I love 2K. Me and my boys played all the time, Boss, Elite, etc. And would love to like be a part of my career and like do stuff. And you know, it took like everything that's great, it took a little bit of time to like put together and come together and at the level that we wanted it to. Then obviously the Dreamer Edition, that cover is amazing. It comes out this fall. But his integration in, you know, in my career, you come across him. Somebody figured this out. Like, he actually released an exclusive track in 2K in one of those scenes that nobody had ever heard before. So somebody realized that, which was really cool. So, but yeah, getting to work with him again, we talk about I think you asked me this question when we're in Vegas, which is, how do you come about cover athletes? And my answer to that was storyline. Like,
yeah,
do they play into what the story we're trying to tell? And Devin does, right? Well, so does J. Cole. Obviously, like, his experience in the EuroLeague and his love for basketball and, you know, all of his pursuits right now, like, all of that plays into, like, this was the time to bring him into the fold. So, and it was, I mean, the response to that cover was unbelievable, just extraordinary. So super excited to see that went really well, and it isn't as big of a stretch. I remember the day before we put out a tease saying, who do you think is going to be on the final 2K cover? And everybody's like, wait, the game comes out in 2 weeks, how is there another cover? And everybody guessed a basketball player. But then when it came out, at first everybody's like, wait, what? And then I was like, oh wait, actually that makes a ton of sense. And I don't think we could have done that like 5 to 10 years ago and it would have made sense. Now it definitely does. So really cool.
I mean, and first of all, the soundtrack this year is kick ass, but the soundtrack's a big part of the game. So a musician being part of the fold makes sense to me.
Well, just like where we sit in music, period. Like, all these artists that play and provide feedback to the game. We threw a launch event in LA a couple weeks ago. Dude, it was 2 weeks ago today. Wow, it feels like it's been a month. And Wayne performed, and you know, Sway Lee, Soulja Boy, E40. There were so many big names in music, both old school and new school. For Chris Brown, all those guys that were there, are real fans of 2K, and it was important for their brand to be at our launch event. And I think that's really telling us a story about how we mean so much to the music game now. And
oh, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Okay, a couple more as quick as you like. I know that 2K Golf, what's the official title for it?
PGA Tour 2K23.
This is a new venture for you guys, right?
No, we had a PGA Tour 2K21. It's biannual, so
That's what I was thinking then. Yeah.
Yep. That was our first golf game, and it was critically acclaimed, like super fun. If you haven't played it, definitely check it out. We haven't announced much about 2K23, but it is, I've played it. It's super fun, totally next level. Like, I cannot wait for people to get their hands on that. Launches in the middle of October. People are going to really, really enjoy that one.
All right,
and of course, you can play Michael Jordan in it too.
Yeah, you can.
Michael Jordan, the golfer.
How's your golf game?
Terrible.
Yeah.
You and me both. To be honest, I think you know my background. Like, I was going to go to law school and dropped out. So I figured like I'd always have to learn. Like, and so I didn't want to like pay for lessons or anything.
Yeah.
So like I never learned, and then for a long time I just never learned, and then. Finally, a few years ago, I went to Topgolf for the first time. And like you would think a man of my size and torque, I don't know if people are described in torque, but anyway, would be really good. And I was really terrible. And I hate things that I'm bad at. Like I don't do, like if I'm bad at it, I give up immediately. Just like I'm over it. So it's not the sport for me. Somebody would have to have a tremendous amount of patience to teach me golf.
Sounds like it. This is independent of what you were just saying, but if you haven't seen the video of Mike Trout hitting a golf ball, it's life-changing. I really recommend that video.
I mean, that guy is a transcendent baseball player, so I assume his golf. See, but I don't think it crosses over. Like, I feel like when I go swing a golf club, and again, I haven't done it a lot, but it turns into a baseball swing. And that's because I used to play baseball.
So. It might be. I have a slice because I'm so like eager to see if I hit the ball that I lift my head. So I have a bad slice.
Yeah.
There seems to be some kind of overlap with basketball players though, because so many of them are actually pretty good, pretty fast.
Totally. And well, it's a big subculture, you know, like as we've, you know, released those two games, the past, you know, PGA Tour 2K21. I'm gonna get that mouthful. There was so much enthusiasm from the basketball players that play NBA 2K, right? Like they were like, "Oh my god, a golf game!" There definitely is a lot of crossover, and I can't wait to like work with some of the NBA players on the golf title. I think that's definitely makes sense.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I think we can thank Jordan for that too. Is really setting the golf culture in the NBA.
Totally.
All right. If people are listening and for whatever reason are still on the fence about buying NBA 2K23, Ronnie 2K, give us your 30-second elevator pitch for NBA 2K23 as our last question.
It is the game that serves so many basketball subcultures. You know, you can be into fashion, music, historical basketball with the Jordan challenges and stepping into eras. You can be in the new age, and you can play like open world RPG style in the city. You can live the life of a basketball player in my career. Really, it's the basketball game that serves so many people and brings so much joy and happiness to a huge player base. And really exciting that, you know, we get to put out this product every year and it brings so much happiness to so many players. And I do got to give also a special shout out to our development team. I mean, it's amazing that every year, you know, we push the envelope. This is our greatest one yet. I can't wait to see where they go next, but it's a labor of love, like hundreds of guys that work on this game. I'm just a small cog in it. I'm so blessed to represent both a great, you know, set of people, innovators, and a great company. I'm just very lucky to do that, and onward and upward, I guess.
All right. Well, you heard it here first. If you're an NBA player and you want your score to go up, got to put in the time.
Just complain to me.
Or just complain to Ronnie. If you like golf, they've got the game for you. If you like fashion, basketball, music, etc., they got the game for you. And Ronnie, if Jason Tatum happens to be the NBA 2K24 cover athlete, I think a cut scene where he comes on the Celtics Lab podcast would really get the people going. So just something to keep in mind.
I'll keep it in mind.
Yeah. Roddy 2K, thank you as always. Pleasures all on this side of the screen. And good luck with your wedding, dude. That's amazing.
Yeah. T-minus, wow, like 17 days.
You're getting nothing done. Just admit it.
No, I mean, like, this is my third podcast in as many hours. I got to keep working, and then I'm going to try my best to shut off. We're going to see how good that is. Part of being a content creator, and my role is it's very, very hard to switch off. I've gotten DMs from, like, 75 NBA players while we've been on this call. So, got to get back to work. But thank you guys for the time.
Thank you very, very much. Catch you later, man.
Take care.